The Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Here.
Representative Boltano?
Thanks.
Here.
Brandon?
Here.
Bouchard Cabrera?
Here.
Chambliss?
Here.
Clemens?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Hardy?
Here.
McClure?
Here.
Morales?
Present.
Ranking Member Umfroy? Representative Roth?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tant?
Present.
Quorum, ma'am.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Members and members of the audience, if you please make sure that your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or are on silent mode. Members, we have several items on the agenda today, and we'll begin with policy bills, followed by the consideration of the consent agenda. Then we will have one presentation. As a reminder of House COVID protocols, presenters are required to wear a mask during their presentation before the committee. House Bill 217, Conservation Area Designations, by Representative Honchowski. Representative Honchowski, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Is it on? Okay. Oh, thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members for allowing me to present House Bill 217, Conservation Area Designations, a bill to honor my dear friend and a colleague to many in the Florida House and in Broward County, and my predecessor in District 96, the late Representative Kristen Jacobs, who lost her battle with colon cancer last April. Representative Jacobs was passionate about protecting the environment and built her career on climate and resiliency policy. Her goal was always to make a positive difference. She began as president of her PTA and her homeowners association and was soon elected to the Broward County Commission, where she served as mayor for two terms. Kristen was a leader in addressing climate change. She was instrumental in the development of the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Compact, which is a partnership between Broward, Miami-Dade, Monroe, and Palm Beach counties to work collaboratively to reduce regional greenhouse gas emissions, implement adaptation strategies, and build climate resilience across the Southeast Florida region. That compact was agreed to in 2009, and Kristen was one of the original signers. Kristen was chosen twice by the President of the United States to serve on national task forces dealing with protecting our oceans and climate resiliency. In 2018, Kristen was the prime co-sponsor of the bill that established the Southeast Florida Coral Reef Ecosystem Conservation Area in order to protect the important ecological and economic resource of coral reefs from the St. Lucie Inlet in Martin County, past Key West to the Dry Tortugas. Kristen believed in fighting for our environment and the ocean she loved. Even when she was very ill and in a hospital bed during the last months of her life, she worked hard to successfully pass legislation banning the importation and sale of shark fins. The state of Florida is a better, more environmentally focused, and environmentally friendly place because of Kristen Jacobs, her dedicated service, and her leadership in environmental policy. And I can think of no greater way to honor Kristen's legacy than to rename the Southeast Florida Coral Reef Ecosystem Conservation Area as the Kristen Jacobs Coral Reef Ecosystem Conservation Area. Kristen was passionate about the environment and fiercely aware of our duty to protect it. She worked in a bipartisan way to preserve Florida's national treasures so that the public and future generations would be able to access and enjoy those resources. For all these reasons, I humbly ask you to support House Bill 217.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any amendments? No amendments. Are there any questions of the bill sponsor? Seeing no questions, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? So we have Edgar Fernandez with Broward County who waves in support. Edgar Fernandez with Monroe County Board of Commissioners waves in support. Edgar Fernandez, Palm Beach County, waves in support. And Jeffrey Scala, who waves in support. Is there debate on the bill, members? Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Honchowski, for bringing this bill. I worked with Christian in the Florida Association of Counties is when I first met her. She is a spirited debater, and I was thrilled to meet with her again in the Florida House. She fought with a great deal of passion, but was also very bipartisan and willing to extend the hand so we can do things together. And that's what it takes to get good things done. I wholeheartedly will support this bill, and I'm glad to hear, because it covers a wide geographical area, that there's consensus in other communities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Honchowski, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say that this bill passed unanimously through the Environment, Agriculture, and Flooding Subcommittee, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Honchowski, having closed on the bill, Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan? Representative Botano?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Bouchetta Cabrera?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens? Fabricio?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Umfroy? Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
13 yea, the bill passes, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 217 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Next, we will take up House Bill 323, Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission Trust Funds by Representative Drake. Representative Drake, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I do that, I want to say thank you for allowing me to sit through this committee meeting and have the opportunity to hear former Representative Jacobs' work memorialized and honored in the fashion that it was done. What a special way to do that, and I'm thank you for not pulling me up first so I could sit through and hear that. She was a special person. House Bill 323 is a part of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission's agency package for the 2021 session. FWC's 13 agency-administered trust funds are scheduled for legislative review during this session. In addition to that, some of the trust funds require modifications to the existing statutory language to provide for additional allowable expenditures to align with the other FWC trust funds. House Bill 323 would add modifying language to allow for 3 trust funds to be used for administrative costs and 6 trust funds to explicitly authorize the investment of funds within the state treasury. That's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drake. Seeing no amendments, are there any questions of the bill sponsor on this bill? Seeing no questions, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? And yes, we have Charlotte Jarrett with Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission waving in support. And David Serta, who is not here but a proponent of your bill. Is there a debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Drake, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Wait, close.
Representative Drake, having closed on the bill, Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan? Representative Botano?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Bouchetta Cabrera?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens? Fabricio?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Umfroy? Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
12 yea, the bill passes, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 323 will be reported favorably.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Next, we will take up House Bill 169, the purchase of commodities and services by water management districts by Representative Maggard. Representative Maggard, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and Committee. I'm honored to present HB 169, an act relating to purchase of commodities and service by water management districts. HB 169 allows for water management districts to expand their purchasing power, which in turn will save the taxpayers' dollars. This bill in no way affects the validity or any contract nor the compliance of future contracts in general law and procurement requirements for water management districts. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Seeing no amendments on the bill, are there any questions of our bill sponsor? Seeing no questions, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? You have David Serda, proponent, who is not here. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Hardy, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say that in previous committee, I had some questions about the bill. Those questions have since been answered, and I stand in support of the bill.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no further debate, Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Wave close.
Representative Maggard, having closed on the bill, Adrian, please call roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan? Representative Botano?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Bouchard Cabrera?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens? Fabricio?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Umfroy? Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
12 yeas, the bill passes, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 169 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Thank Representative Maggard. Members, we are about to take up the consent agenda for appropriations project bills. We will take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of these bills listed on the consent agenda. Members, we will not take up, question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in question and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. Members, in your packet, there is a list of the appropriation project bills. With that being said, are there any questions? Seeing no questions, we have some public testimony. We have Sam Wagner with the City of Brooksville who waves in support of House Bill 2459. Thomas Hobbs with the Town of Longboat Key, who waves in support of House Bill 3283. Taylor Beal with Leon County Board of Commissions that waves in support of House Bill 2021. Members, is there any debate? Before I call the vote on the consent agenda, are there any nay forms? No. Adrian, will you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan? Representative Botano?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Bouchard Cabrera?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens? Fabricio?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Umfroy? Roth?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
12 yeas, the bill passes, ma'am.
Members, by your vote, all the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. Now we will move on to the presentation, and today we have with us Holly Bell with the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, the Director of Cannabis. Members, we will take questions at the conclusion of the presentation, and Ms. Bell, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for having me today. I'm going to kind of go over some things that may be repetitive, so I just want to make sure everybody is up to speed if we have some new people to hemp. So I am the Director of Cannabis with Florida Department of Agriculture, and we have a hemp program. We had a lot of public interest after the Farm Bill, so we got together and got Senate Bill, assembled a team in preparation for having a hemp program and a bill pass. and this was our team. FDACS has a very extensive group and depth of resources in the department. We have several divisions that have the skills, the ability to do this program, and a lot of very talented people. So in preparation for that, we started thinking about what we should do. We got Senate Bill 1020, and then in the House, we have Representative Masullo that helped us pass that, and you gave us the task of creating the hemp program. We went to work and got our rules done, and we put together 5 rules. We got those completed, workshopped, and done. We had these workshops that we did throughout the state, and we tried to make sure that we traveled throughout the state so everybody had an opportunity to talk to us. We had 900 plus people attend and over 190 public comments that we took into consideration when writing our rules. We have had 4 out of the 5 rules done and adopted and effective by the first of 2020. So we're coming into COVID. That didn't help make us skip a beat. We have continued on, been able to implement those and regulate the industry. Our last rule was the cultivation rule, and we got that effective in April of 2020. So we issued our first cultivation permits then. A lot of people have asked us why we did it kind of the reverse. We set up the infrastructure so that our farmers would have some place to sell their hemp. And the infrastructure would have experience and already be working and processing hemp that was brought in from out of state. So that has worked really well for the state and helped things to grow. We got approval of our USDA plan in April, which was a necessity. And as you all know, the USDA finally put out their rules, their final rules. We've had an administrative change at the federal level. They've asked that all rules be put on hold. It was going to be effective on the 22nd of March, but that is now on hold, and we will wait till the new administration reviews that rule. The good news is our rule aligns with theirs very well. We have to change 2 things, but we had them in our initial rules, but the USDA made us change them to their interim rules. Now they flip to our point of view. So it's all great, and we have a great working relationship with the USDA. The 3 divisions within our department that oversee the hemp program are the AES, Division of Agriculture and Environmental Services. They do seeds, pesticides, fertilizer, and animal feed. Cultivation is done by DPI, our Department of Plant Industry. And then Division of Food Safety is processing, manufacturing, and retailing. And you can kind of think of that as after it leaves the field, food safety oversees all of that, because you defined hemp as something that is orally ingested. So we put it up under food to make sure it was very safe for consumers. Currently, we have about 18 seed dealers that say they have hemp in their name and they're selling some kind of hemp seeds. We have 29 animal feed dealers registered with us here in Florida. In the cultivation space, when I put this together, we had 729. We have popped over 800 in the meantime, and it continues to grow. Our first harvest was 249 acres. We had 44 acres destroyed. Everybody was very concerned about hot fields because of the genetics had not been around for many years. So what we found is we have very talented farmers in the state of Florida. We only had about 2 fields go hot. The rest of them were actually poor performance, too much water, things like that. And we allowed them to destroy those fields. We have 66 counties represented throughout the state with cultivation permits. In the food safety world, we have over 7,000 retailers who have a permit to sell hemp. That continues to grow. We have 280 manufacturers and 219 warehouses, 38 distributors, and 15 extractors. We keep these lists out on the website so anybody can download them for public information, and those numbers continue to grow. We update them every other week. We continue to do research. This is vital for this industry to continue to grow. And we're very fortunate to have FAMU leading that charge with the first to approve seeds and clones. And Florida State is closely behind them. And then UF has about 21 clones that they have approved as of this month. So we also have University of South Florida participating, FIU getting ready to start, and South Florida State College doing a water study on hemp. So we have some great research going. The USDA, the federal government, has extended the pilot program, so we hope to continue on with that research. Education is also key for the industry to grow, and we do have University of Florida teaching cannabis law at their law school, and Florida Gulf Coast University is offering a one-week cannabis certification workshop where you can learn all about it and then go out and get a job in the industry. That has been hugely attended by many people. And then they also are offering a major and have quite an extensive student body organization. We have more research that's going to be needed, and that's something that Florida's probably going to have to look at after the Farm Bill extension expires, because continuing to improve our genetics is something the farmers tell me we need, and that's something that we hope to work on with everybody in the future. Connecting with Floridians, that's really important. We try to keep our website up to date, and I try to keep a lot of things out there so it's available for anybody to get access to easily. We have webinars, and what we do there is we go look at our email and the questions and the calls we get, and we develop a list of the most frequently asked questions, and then if we see a common trend, we will develop a webinar. A couple examples are labeling. Everybody was confused on what labels, what it was supposed to say. So we put together a PowerPoint and an hour-long webinar, and we had hundreds of people attend that. What we find is our violations go down, and people are more compliant when we do that. So we have developed a series of those with Weights and Measures and other groups that oversee and regulate. We have done a law enforcement education effort. Major Burns is in our Ag Law group, and Major Burns wrote a 30-page paper that is out on our website that we have sent out to every law association and every law department that wants it in the state of Florida. And actually many other states have requested it because they've heard about it. He has traveled the state pre-COVID and then virtually during COVID to train anybody and work with them that wants help in understanding how cannabis laws and the level of THC has changed and how it affects law enforcement. We have a great working rapport with them. I frequently work with narcotics officers and prosecutors and help them with cases that they have. We have an informal group of all state regulators nationwide. We get together every other month. And Doris Hamilton, my peer in Kentucky, started that. I have helped her with that. And they usually get together and have a conference every summer, but because of COVID, we couldn't this last summer. So Florida hosted the first virtual conference for 2 days. It was a huge success, and we had about 300 people attend. We had people like the DEA, USDA, and other national experts speak at a conference, and some of our Florida staff spoke also. So that went really well. Then we also have a lot of speaking engagements that we'll do, and a lot of it is virtual now. I cover a lot of Florida and other states. International also, we're getting requests for that because Florida is developing an import-export business with hemp. And then I have a colleague, Carlos Alvarez, in Miami, who has done a lot in the minority sector and the Hispanic issue. He's bilingual, and we've had a lot of interest there, and we've held actual conferences and workshops for that group. Industry knowledge and resources. Again, we have IFAS and FAMU who hold events for farmers, for people interested in the industry. The other great thing that has happened in Florida is we've developed 3 hemp associations. They're very strong and they have great membership and they provide a lot of quality networking, education, and information to the industry. And we have thousands of people that have joined that. Advisory Council, you put in our bill that we have an advisory council, and we just met. We will be meeting again in the future. We didn't meet as much during COVID. We had that headed by a colleague in our department that we lost to cancer during COVID. So we've kind of regrouped and we're back on track with that. But this is our current members. We do have two vacant seats waiting for the governor to appoint those and hope to have that soon. We did collaborate with sister agencies because as much as you have a defined lane, it also overlaps some. We have a great working rapport with FDLE, DOH, and then DBPR, who is who we overlap with the most. And we've held collaborative meetings and have some working arrangements and gave some clear direction to the industry on who does what in that field. Looking ahead, what's important? Education, education, education. And that's something that we're working on a lot this year and collecting data. We also have started sending out actual surveys to the industry to collect real-time data from them. So the next time I talk to you, I will be able to bring real live data from the industry of what they're producing and the numbers they're seeing. We have this logo that we've patented. We have been working on economic development with partners within the state, like Enterprise Florida. They've been a great partner. We have, again, the data we're collecting. We are regulating the industry, and that is something that there's something new every day, and they're a creative industry. So it's never a dull moment. It's the biggest jigsaw puzzle I've probably ever had to solve on any given day. So we also are working on water issues. We ask that everybody who gets a cultivation permit enroll in our BMPs, best management practices. So the Ag Water Group is enrolling them. We have continued collaboration with law enforcement, which is important. And then testing of the products. Our food safety lab is one of the best I've ever worked with. They test the products, and we have issued stop sales and warnings and partnered with the FDA and the EPA on some toxic levels of lead we found in products. I would like to end with sharing some success stories because I can talk about all the great things we're doing, but unless you see it in your area, how do you know it's really working? So these are some stories I'll share. Greenpoint Research has a 32-acre complex at exit 283 where the Busy Bee is, 8 miles north. So that building was the old High Line building and had sat on the county's books for over 7 years. They have purchased it. They are repurposing it. They have employed 20 people. They will continue to grow. So that has been a great success in Hamilton County. Here's a picture of their hemp harvest. They had one farmer in the area grow 110 acres, all good hemp, and they have established a huge dryer, if you ever want to go see it, at that complex. They dry the hemp there, and they will be processing and then manufacturing products there. They will also have enough space to invite colleagues in that also do the same thing or different things in the industry and create a little hemp complex there. Then we have another facility down in Ocala, and this facility is also in a qualified opportunity zone. It's a 63-acre building that has multiple hemp industry businesses in it. Two of them are Knox Horticulture. They work on genetics. Then they have a processor, which is somebody who takes the raw plant, brings it down to a crude oil and maybe a distillate to put into products to make and manufacture. Two other businesses in there is Trust Wellness. They're what we call a white labeler. They will manufacture your recipe for you and put your label on it, and they'll do it for five other people. Then we also have Greens Reserve. This group has developed a hemp snuff or dip as an alternative to tobacco. And they're shipping out their first packages this week. So that's a huge success and getting a lot of attention nationwide. In Umatilla, we have an old citrus processing plant that was sitting vacant. And the Treadwell family bought it. They have repurposed it and made it into a hemp complex also. They're employing 15 people and expanding every week. They also do white labeling and have a co-op of farmers that grow for them. And here's some pictures of some of those grows. They also grow a lot inside. Then they've expanded and partnered with a CBD cafe in Fort Myers, who is one of the first in the country and franchising throughout the country. And they're white labeling a product for them. So as this continues to grow, you see partnering inside the state of Florida that then expands out throughout the country. We have one of the largest manufacturers in Tampa. Global Widgets took a vacant industrial building of over 100,000 square feet, and they repurposed it into a manufacturing facility, and they white label for many people and ship throughout the United States. They're grossing well over $30 million a year. They're employing over 169 people, and will be up to 190 now probably, and growing rapidly. They are a huge manufacturer. They've had to expand to another building, and I can see them expanding even in this year because they're growing that quickly. So that's kind of an overall picture of what's going on in the state, how we started, what we're working on, and where we are right now with some success stories. So again, thank you so much for the bill. Thank you for letting FDACS have this program, and welcome any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. Members, do we have any questions? Ranking Member Omfroy.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation, Director Bell. My question is, you mentioned Enterprise Florida, that you guys are working with them, but I've gotten calls into my office because I served on ag in reference to the fact that Enterprise Florida is not able to work with hemp companies because of language that says it can't. And what I understand it to be is that there was language placed in by the commissioner that makes it difficult for Enterprise Florida. Enterprise Florida will not even take hemp companies on trade missions to other countries because of this limitation. So I'd like to get further information as to why Enterprise Florida is not able to do business or take hemp companies from Florida to expand Florida's reach. So I'd like to find out more information about that. If you have any, I'd love to hear what you have to say. And thank you again, Chair.
Ms. Bell, you're recognized.
Thank you. I will look into that. I've actually ran into a few bumps in the beginning, but I found that maybe it was just some communication that needed clarification, but I will follow up and get back with you on that.
Representative Botana, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair Tomko. Ms. Bell, thank you very much for coming in and explaining. I'm a novice to this here. Just on 24 there, page 20, ag water best manager practice, does hemp use an extreme amount of water compared to other crop? This is something I've heard. Could you just clarify that for me?
You're recognized, Ms. Bell.
Thank you. No, it does not. Probably less than most. And if you want some actual numbers, I'm glad to send those to you.
Great. Representative Hardy, you're recognized for a question. Oh, no question. Members, Representative Brennan, you are recognized.
Thank you. Hi, does the department still administer the Florida Domestic Marijuana Eradication Program? They do?
Ms. Bell, you're recognized.
Yes, we do.
Okay. I used to fly for the state from 1988 to 2012, and last count, I'd spotted about 26,000 marijuana plants from the air. And I saw the major's name, so I guess we have to coordinate. Of course, the kind of product we were spotting was illegal, and it would not have been planted in fields in rows, although in 1998, they were still doing that until we started flying. So I also plant a crop called sun hemp, which I know is not in the cannabis. It's a Crotalaria product. But so they do, I guess, coordinate where they're not flying, because it'd be hard to tell the difference from there.
You recognize, Ms. Bell.
Thank you. That's a great question. And yes, we have aerial maps and geo-tracking. And one of the things that we did when we asked for a hemp cultivation license that we felt because of that program and some other things for law enforcement was vitally important is that you have to give us the geo-targets and the GPS of where you're growing, and we actually draw it out on an aerial map. And then our oats group plugs that into an aerial map and feeds that to that team. So they're very aware of where they are and where they are not.
One more quick follow-up. The crops you had to destroy, have you had any instances where illegal marijuana was grown nearby and cross-pollinated a legal hemp product and caused that THC level to be too high?
Ms. Bell, you're recognized.
Thank you. No, we have not. That was talked about a lot, but no, we have not.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Representative Stevenson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is not, I've heard some very positive things. It's just not an area I know that much about. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the consumer level, are they able to discern the Florida-grown and overseen products from others that may not be so carefully vetted?
Ms. Bell, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for asking that question. That's a great question. We have a Fresh from Florida program, and that's what that logo goes on. And we actually have developed a Fresh from Florida hemp logo, and we have 22 people enrolled in that, and we ask them to proudly display that on a label. So, yes, they can do that. In the marketing, we allow for that. You're welcome. You.
Members, do we have any further questions? Seeing none, Ms. Bell, thank you so much for your presentation today. We really appreciate you coming in, updating us on what you have done. And I know that you will be following up with the members that had questions on specifics, and we look forward to you coming back.
Thank you.
And members, this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Chambliss moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.